This is 10/20/89, an interview with Jory. Is that J-O-R-Y?
Yes.
Burroughs, B-U-R-R-O-U-G-H-S?
Yes. My name is Jory Mark Burroughs. I'm 22 years old and a senior at Michigan State. My major is animal science, and I hope to graduate with that with high honor. And my home address is on Forest Street in East Lansing, Michigan. A little about my hometown. I grew up in Bath, Michigan, which is just north of East Lansing, a rural town. It was much more rural back then than it is today. Today they have a lot more supermarkets, and now I guess the highway goes through there. But when I was little, they didn't have the highway and the supermarket, and so a lot of the times that I can remember best about growing up is just having a lot of fun romping around out in the woods with friends. Some of our neighbors had some horses, and we would go out and we'd ride horses. And generally, it was just kind of a relaxed, laid-back type of attitude that I had back then. It was a real good opportunity to get a lot of outdoor camping and everything. And my friends and I spent a lot of time in the outdoors. The school system, I didn't particularly enjoy. They seemed to have a big problem with people calling in with potential threats of a bomb. And so school was canceled usually once every 3 weeks. Because of that, I guess in 1906 or 1910, they had had a bomb that had actually blew up one of the high schools. And so that was one of the main reasons. Now every time someone calls in, they evacuate and everyone gets the day off. So
it wasn't your friends calling in to get out of school.
No, no. Well, I didn't know. It wasn't me, but it was, I think it was, you know, someone serious about it, but it certainly kept up. And also they had a lot of snow days off since it was a rural type setting. It was an easy point where the school buses couldn't get through.
How would you describe your fellow students in comparison to yourself? Are they serious? Do they mess around a lot? Or in hindsight, I'm sure you had one feeling for them then, but now as you look back and you see yourself and you compare yourself to them, how would you do that?
I would look at them and say that they weren't quite as serious. I had moved to Bath from Canada and afterwards moved to East Lansing, and for the three places that I lived, my friends in Bath were by far the most kind of laid back and not as serious about schools. Some of my other friends have been. They seemed to, you know, take the whole atmosphere in, and the school system wasn't really big on pushing academics a whole heck of a lot. And so they were just kind of, you know, out in the country, have fun. And a lot of them were on farms, and they preferred to spend a lot of time on the farm doing farm chores or riding horses or whatever particular species they had, and didn't seem to care too much about school. My family didn't have a farm. We just had a house in the country, but I spent a lot of time studying, and then I also spent a lot of time, you know, when I could, free time, out, you know, riding horses or whatever.
How old were you? Can you talk a little bit about your Canadian background, how old you were when you came from Canada?
Well, I was born in Montreal, and my father went over, and he was a big designer in Expo 68. And so we stayed in Montreal till that was finished, and then we moved to Toronto and then to Calgary. And so when I was about, I think, 7 or 8, we moved to Bath then from Calgary. And in terms of my experiences in Canada, I don't remember too much. I remember things that happened at Calgary, but it's kind of so long ago, I can't remember specifics.
How old were you when you came to Bath again?
About 7 or 8. So I had just started school in Canada, and then I just started school.
Can you talk a little bit about your father's influence on your attitude towards academics?
Well, my father is kind of a perfectionist, and he's a real hardworking person, and it's not so much the things he said, but just the actions that he performs that have kind of had an influence on me. He puts in, you know, as an architect, he puts in a good, you know, 16 hours a day of work. And then he comes home and he does, you know, work at home. And in the summers, you know, when he works, there's, you know, all sorts of things around the house, outside that need to be done. And it isn't really the things he says, but more the actions that he performs that have kind of, you know, kind of honed me into the idea that, you know, it's to get places in life requires a lot of hard work. And he kind of exemplifies that in my mind.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister, and she's kind of the opposite of me. She's not really as hardworking as other students I've seen, but...
She in college?
Mm-hmm. Well, she graduated from the University of Michigan and barely graduated. In terms of if you look at students on a spectrum, I would be at one end and she would be at the other end. We're pretty much direct opposites.
By that, you mean what? That you work that much harder?
Well, in terms of that I work very much harder, I'm a goal-oriented person. I set goals and attain them, and I get very high grades. And my sister does not really know where she's going in life, doesn't really have an idea of what she really likes, and she is not really a good student. So in that aspect, we differ very greatly.
How about the influence of your mother in all this?
Well, my mother is kind of a laid-back, relaxed person. Her personality in regard to with when she's around my father is kind of, my father is more the dominant personality, and her personality doesn't exactly show up. So I don't know. I would think that I've had much greater influence by my father than I have from my mother.
It sounds as if you inherited your father's drive and that your sister is more like your mother. Is that fair?
Yes, that'd be a fair statement to say. I'm fairly assertive in my actions. You know, I go out and do what I would like to do. And my mom and my sister are both kind of, they like to see what other people would like to do also. You know, if, you know, well, I don't want to rush it type attitude. And sometimes it creates a little problems in the family when one group wants to go do something right away and the other group, you know, doesn't want to, but we overcome that.
So when you look back, you see that your basic drive in some way has come directly from your father, or his example.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's more his example, more the actions that he's performed. He has always stressed, you know, that he wants me to go into something that would make a lot of money. You know, he says, you know, you have a lot of drive, a lot of ambition. You know, I'd like to see you go into something like computers or computer engineering, where there's, you know, a chance to make lots of money and move up the promotion ladder. And I've pretty much kind of set my own course and not have followed his suggestions. You know, I consider myself kind of a maverick in that sense. You know, I'm not a rebel, I'm not a conformist, but I kind of take an independent stand from others and proceed from there.
Taking a stand like that must have required, maybe it wasn't taken all in one evening, but so it's evolved.
Mm-hmm.
But can you talk a little bit about your feelings as you decided to go against something your father recommended?
Well, he was not really excited about me going into something relating to medicine or the health aspect. He always had, you know, big ambitions, and in that sense, I think he kind of has a limited scope of ways to be successful in life, or what he deems successful. And so, you know, as I began to not go to these computer stores to get information or not attend these particular seminars that he would bring back to look at, it was kind of a long process for him of realizing. For me, It wasn't really, you know, I'm thinking about, okay, I'm doing something my dad doesn't want to do. It was more, I think, a realization on his part, you know, slowly, bit by bit, that, you know, well, maybe he's not quite as interested as I would hope, you know. He's not real interested, and you know, the more he would say, you know, are you interested in getting a computer? You know, I'd love to get you one, and you can work on designing something, maybe make something, you know, programming, do something for the summer. And I'd be like, no, I have other plans. And it would, I think it was kind of a long process for him to realize that I wasn't exactly going to follow what he would like me to follow.
Can you talk about his degree of acceptance now of your direction?
Well, right now he has reached a level of acceptance, which is pretty much, I'd say, 100%. I've pretty much convinced him that, or pointed out to him, I don't know if I've 100% convinced him, but I pointed out to him that my approach to life, you know, there are different ways that you approach success. How would you like to be successful? And I think he's kind of come to the realization by the amount of work that I've put into my area of interest, you know, by going through and approaching it from many different angles, analyzing, do I really want to do this, kind of the long-range goals, effects of that. He's kind of realized that I have a thorough grasp of what I'm getting into, and I think that kind of finally settled down into him as he's realizing that, you know, I have a thorough grasp of what I'd like to do and where I'm going, and I think that kind of has settled his mind down a little bit.
Have you always had this single-mindedness and ability to focus? As far as you can remember, as long as you can remember?
Yeah, I would definitely say that. It's, you know, it's certainly been the case that when my father was away, you know, on architectural type internships or meetings, and I was mainly around just my mom, that I would certainly, you know, take the lead and direction in things. Yeah, I would say I pretty much have had this for a long time, long as I can remember.
Did you ever entertain any other vocations? Did you ever want to pursue a vocation which really was unrelated to your current one?
Well, I think in high school you always reach the point, I think everyone reaches a point in high school where they're faced with all sorts of things that you want to do. I mean, all throughout high school there's your career center in there, and a lot of classes in high school would have you do reports on different careers or areas to try and get you to think about something else other than your targeted interest or, you know, area of interest that you're currently thinking about. I mean, they do a good job in high school of kind of providing the opportunities and experiences of everyday jobs and try and get you to think about, you know, what college would gear you towards that, or is that a technical school or armed services or whatever. And so I did think about, you know, all sorts of options. I like the structured system in the military, but I have big value problems with the military. I thought about doing something relating to...
Can you talk a little bit about that? Your disagreement with the value system in the military?
Oh, sure. The thing I like about the military is the structured opportunity, the discipline of it. You know, it provides discipline to people, hard work. You know, you can move up the ladder, promotions. It's very similar to the Boy Scouts, which I went through and received my Eagle Scout and 3 Eagle Palms. And in terms of the value aspect of it, I think the way I look at the military, I get the perception that they dehumanize people to such an extent that if you join, I would not feel comfortable doing things because I would think that they would want it done just their way and that the people are just the tools of getting it done. And I would like to see myself doing things, you know, doing research or whatever, focusing on things that I like to do and not have that much of a strict overhang over me. I see disagreement with their values of nuclear weapons in general and the idea of a lot of the research that the military does with nuclear weapons and microbiology aspects, you know, relating to germ warfare and whatnot. There's also the element of secrecy and everything that kind of makes me a little nervous. What I read in the newspaper, I can't always believe, and I know there's a lot more going on that people don't know about, and that the element of that kind of gives me a little wary feeling.
Do you think that there's any less structure in a large corporation like Ford or Chrysler, you're talking about the, I should ask, do you think there's any less dehumanization when you go to work for Ford and you become part of a vast chain mm-hmm. of engineers who's working on a gear which may not be manufactured mm-hmm. until 5 years from the time it leaves your drawing board?
Mm-hmm. I would think that there is a little more humanization. In looking at a company like Ford, for example, I would admit that if you're someone at an entry level, just a worker on a line, I would say there's probably not much humanization in that. It's probably, you know, just the same thing every day, and they would just look at a group of people working. But I would say that someone who's involved in some of the designing or research, they are given kind of guidelines, but they're allowed a lot of independence to achieve a product that would be, say, fuel efficient and, you know, pleasing design to the customer. And in that sense, I would see a lot more importance placed in that role of designing something that can benefit everyone in the whole country, and also an aspect of there's a lot more freedom, I think, to go about designing it in a company like Ford, for example, as compared to the military. There wouldn't be as much red tape, I would think, maybe to test things, to get products tested. I mean, I may be wrong. I'm just assuming that there wouldn't be as much as in the military.
Let me jump. We're wandering far afield here from some of the questions I had. First of all, were there any particular questions that interested you? Or something which you feel particularly strong about?
One of the ones I like here, I think it relates to college students, is the so-called pattern that many of our parents followed in, you know, entering college right from high school and then going on to get married, and then they have children, and kind of the attitude there, living happily ever after. And you were asking, are there any alternatives to this? And for most college students, that isn't really the type of pattern they'd like to follow. Most college students come out of college usually in debt. If they go right from high school to college, especially, a lot of them come out in debt. They want to explore, see the world, have fun while they can, and to them the idea of getting married is not so much something that you do, but later on, after you've had time to do what you wanted to do and ready to settle down, that's kind of the way you use settle down, is almost a negative connotation, you know, settle down one spot, I can't go out and do all I want to do as much anymore. When you got a lot of money, or not a lot, but a comfortable level of money. And so I think that's a big deviation from the pattern that many of our parents have followed.
So you think there's a major difference between that pattern and what right. most young collegiates feel?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many more alternatives now that get pushed in terms of right out of high school. I know a lot of times a lot of people are choosing the military because the military is a way to, for them, see the world and then get a chance to get college paid for. There's people who just want to work, maybe go to community college in a particular trade or whatnot, and kind of take some time. lot of people right after college see the Peace Corps as a good opportunity. There's kind of, in some ways, a feeling going around of doing a little more philanthropy, and the Peace Corps is one thing that people are seeing as a good opportunity to help others.
Do you see yourself as a member of an elite group in the sense that those in college are most likely the ones who will lead the country, who will make the important decisions? A group which will progress far beyond what most people will achieve?
Not when I look at people in college. Other people in college, it almost scares me to think about some of them as future leaders. You know, if you look at something like Cedar Village incident the other time, and you look at 3,000 people, you know, kind of rioting and looting, it doesn't exactly make you feel like your peers are the type of people that are going to lead the country. It's kind of a scary feeling. I can see particular individuals or groups of individuals who I can see as potential leaders and forerunners in their field. But in terms of looking at our age group and most of the peers in my classes and whatnot, no, I don't really see us as a whole as leaders. I mean, there are certainly exceptions and groups of people, but on the whole, I don't get that perception.
You're an RA, correct?
Yes.
You have a certain perception of, you're a senior now, mm-hmm. You have a certain perception of incoming freshmen. Describe for me in a general way who that freshman is. His problems, his ambitions, his goals.
A lot of the freshmen that come in have big concerns about the future. There's a lot more of an increase, I find, in people concerned about world affairs and how that'll affect them. They think about the future a lot more. It's not just something that happens, but how will it affect them? There's a slight tone of pessimism to them, I would suspect, from the way they approach their attitudes. There's a little bit of a rebellious attitude, but I mean that's common, I would think. A lot of the freshmen that come up, and you know, they like to drink, they like to go out, and they like to stay up late because they couldn't really in high school, or you know, now is their big opportunity. So you know, that's common. I think that happens everywhere. There's also a naiveness, but you know, that's common too. They come up here and they have this molded perception maybe of what they want to go into, and as soon as they take their first class, you know, in that area, they're like, whoa, this is certainly not what I want to go into, or this is much more advanced, or they take another class and they start to, you know, get influenced by that class or clubs they see or whatnot. So I think a lot of them come in with a certain idea, and as a result, many of them change their major 4 or 5 times. That's common, and I don't think that's bad. I think that's really good that people get exposed, and by the time they graduate, hopefully really know what they want by the experiences that they've had, the classes that lead them to believe that would be interesting, or internships they've had, whatnot.
What are some of the specific problems that they come to you about in connection with problems with their roommates, for example?
In terms of problems with roommates, a lot of them have hard times dealing with human awareness issues. Maybe they have a roommate who is homosexual, and that's kind of a bold move for them, is to be in a room with someone and get along. A lot of times maybe it would be a minority group and they aren't used to sharing that close of quarters with someone, and they're not sure how they feel. I mean, they feel at first a little bit uncomfortable, but then they're not sure, should they move out or should they try and get along? And so a lot of the issues with the roommates do relate to human awareness. You know, there's also a lot of getting used to another person's style regardless of who that person is, especially in universities where there's a lot of tripling. You're under a lot of pressure to get along with people who you've assumedly never met before, who come from different backgrounds, have different attitudes, friends, items, you know, that they bring. And I think it's kind of a big adjustment for people to fit in really well.
Talk a little bit about the adjustment you had when you first came to school, your freshman year. Did you blow off steam because you were free for the first time, et cetera, et cetera?
No, I didn't, actually. When I first got to college, I kind of was looking around and just interested in doing a lot of exploring about what I wanted to do. I'm not someone who enjoys drinking alcohol at all, and so there wasn't any rebel attitude. I wanted to go out and party all the time. I found a lot of friends who supported my beliefs, and we did a lot of activities on our own. I wouldn't call them rebellious. They were just, you know, fun activities. Spent a lot of time at the IM, a lot of time in the outdoors doing outing activities. We looked around other clubs that we could join, and basically we just got ourselves actively involved in areas on campus. And I think in that sense, I think that's one reason I'll be able to graduate on time. I was able to figure out what I wanted early in college and kind of geared the rest of my college toward that, rather than someone who I would suspect kind of spends the first few years rebelling, then makes the realization once they get out of here they're going to have to do something, and then starts looking around and as a result starts changing the major. But for me, college was not too much of a big adjustment, except for my roommates. They were very much of a big adjustment for me. One was from New Jersey. I was in a triple. One was from New Jersey, a very rich suburb. His mom had a PhD in English and was now a housewife. And his dad was a lawyer in a big corporation in New York. And as a result, he was able to do whatever he wanted. His parents always sent him money. And he would call home and his mom would do his papers for him. And I always had big values problems with that, and it was a big adjustment for me.
She would write his papers?
Yes. He would call home and say, well, what should I say? I don't understand. And she would tell him, and then she would say, well, send it home, and I'll revise it and send it back. And going back to the question you were saying about looking at people as world leaders, someone like that scares me if I think of that person as a leader who's going to, you know, kind of move our generation. You know, that's scary.
Did you ever confront him?
Oh, yeah, all the time. We had big confrontations. We did not get along at all.
How long was he your roommate?
Well, for the year, it wasn't an area where I could switch real well, and I didn't want to mess with having to change my address and then have to rewrite all my friends and everything, and I kind of enjoyed where I was, the location and whatnot. I didn't feel like that he should make me move because we didn't get along, but...
Were you ever tempted to turn him in for plagiarizing or cheating?
Well, he didn't plagiarize in terms of that he copied things from books. The only thing I really think that he did wrong was he just had someone else do his paper. And I'm not about to go to a professor and say that, you know, well, he didn't really write this paper. Someone else wrote it for him.
Would you do that?
Oh, no, I wouldn't go to someone else and have them write my papers.
Why not?
Well, because, I mean, there's two aspects to it. First of all, there's the ethical aspect.
You've told me in so many words that you would not do that. You would not have somebody write your own paper. Now here this SOB is. He's writing these papers. He's probably getting good grades on them. You're over in the library killing yourself and maybe not getting the same grade. I mean, didn't you have the urge to strangle this guy? I get mad hearing this story.
Yeah, the thought did occur. Not seriously, but, you know, I was upset and I... But it's kind of like I approached him and said, you know, you're the one that's really going to lose out because you're not...
You're the one that's what?
I told him, you're the one that's losing out because, in essence, you're not learning how to write for yourself, and so it'll always catch up with you in the future, and you're going to lose the satisfaction or the pride of what you get back. And actually, excuse me, he didn't do that all that good.
His mother wasn't that good a writer.
No, he averaged B's on his papers, and I averaged A's, and I always thought that was kind of funny. But his mom had the PhD. I think it was just like, you know, she was somewhere in New Jersey, and she had no idea about really what was going on in the class and what they really wanted. And, you know, for him just to send her things and like, I really need this to be revised or whatnot, she really had not the perception of what the paper was really about or whatnot. And someone like me who was right there, if I had problems, I could just go see the TA or the professor and say, you know, I'm confused about what angle you want this to be at or what's the focus. And I think that's in one way that it did catch up with him. You know, he didn't take the time to go in and talk to the professor about it because he's like, hey, my mom's got a PhD in English, this will be no problem, you know, I'll just write it, she'll revise it, no big deal.
Did you compare your background to his? Here's the rich kid who's had everything.
Mm-hmm.
Here you've worked hard. He may have been gifted, I don't know.
Well, I wouldn't use that word to describe. I wouldn't say he was gifted at all. I think his parents thought he was, but he didn't really do that well in school. And someone like me who was hardworking and just spent a lot of time working at what I had to do, I did quite well compared to him.
Now, what about the other roommate?
He was...
I don't wish to incriminate anybody. You don't have to give me any names.
Oh, no. He was from Flint, and we got along fine. We were just kind of different people. He was a real outgoing, really humorous person. He was white, and he liked to do a lot of raps, you know, kind of like he was into these rap things, and he liked to move his hands around and, like, say these raps. And
what do you mean, raps?
Oh, you know, like, he would say things like, I need a hug, pull out the rug, duh, duh. And he would, like, you know, kind of make all these, like, jokes, but he was really into making them to kind of like a rap beat.
And, as the blacks do.
Right. And a lot of people, you know, liked him, got along with him because he was, you know, fun to be around. But he did a lot of drinking, and I didn't enjoy being around people like that who spent a lot of time drinking, so.
Did he put pressure on you to join the...
Oh, no. No, he was... The one from New Jersey did. He put a lot of pressure on me. He was like, oh, we're going to get you wasted by the end of the year. I guarantee it. And I was like, well, you know, you'll be wasting your time if you try. And he's like, no, I'm really going to get you wasted. And they're always, like, trying to get me next to something that had alcohol. And they'd take a picture. They'd be like, yeah, everyone see, he was right next to alcohol. And it didn't bother me, you know, if they did take a picture and I was, like, walking by something that, like, one of his beer cans or something. But because people were just like, you know, oh, you guys are stupid. You know, why are you trying to do this, you know? Other people were just kind of laughing him off, so. But he did put a lot of pressure. See, that's one of the reasons we didn't get along is he was always trying to put down everything I did and say, you know, well, I'm from New Jersey, New York, and that's where all the culture is, you know. Here in East Lansing, the Midwest, you guys have absolutely no culture at all.
Of course, you would say, why did you come out here then?
Yeah, I'd say, hey, we didn't ask you to come. You can go back anytime you want. You know, he would say, well, how do you go see a concert? I'd say, I buy tickets and I go see the concert. He'd be like, well, see, the cultural way in New York to go see it is to rent a limousine, go out to a dinner at a very expensive restaurant, and afterwards go somewhere, get alcohol, and just drive around for a while before you go back home. And I was like, well, yeah, in that sense, not too many people in East Lansing do that. So if that's your version of how you want to do it, you know, I'm not going to try and change him. But
so you did not enjoy living with him?
No, I would. Yes, that is correct. It was very rough. In the end, it was, you know, it was kind of funny. He was always saying that, well, they're not going to get anywhere in life. It's the people. I guess he was... political science, I don't know if he was pre-law or business or what, but kind of think maybe he was interested in being a lawyer, kind of maybe following his father's footsteps. But, you know, he was just like, the people, you know, these corporation stuff, they're the ones that, you know, make the money, and they're the ones that, you know, are the movers and the shakers, and you people in the sciences are just aren't going to get anywhere in life.
In all this madness to get a degree, have you had any fun? I mean, any really serious but humorous water fights in the dorm during freshman year where you just let loose and went a little crazy?
No, I channel my outlets more into the outdoors. You know, I like to do a lot of rock climbing, whitewater rafting, backpacking. And so I spend a lot of my energy is given off that way. In the other areas in exercise, I do a lot of swimming. And to me, I like outlets that are pleasing to me, not something that's just totally stupid and ridiculous. Being an RA, of course, I can't do those things about, you know, water fights or anything like that. But when I confront people about doing them, I always confront it in a humorous way so they don't think that, you know, like they're the dumbest people in the world for doing it.
Have you had a problem attempting to enforce the stricter regulations affecting the use of alcohol?
No, not at all. Not at all. The university spent so much time sending out letters to people, and there's big warnings everywhere. People heard about it it hasn't been much problem at all. The only problem is comes from freshmen who weren't here the year before to hear about the big change that would happen and kind of only heard about it in the summer. But they're not a problem. They're just curious about what really is going on. And so beginning of the year, we just kind of explained it all to them, and they don't really have much problem with it because the other people aren't doing it as much, and so to them, you know, it's not
easy. Is it better?
Oh, yeah, it's much better, definitely. A lot more of the people are being responsible, being careful, and if they want to drink, they're taking it off campus, people's houses, you know, wherever. So in that effect, I think the alcohol policy has had a very positive effect on people. It's also kind of interesting. These are type of info you only learn when you're an RA, probably. But a poll was done on the campus of Michigan State regarding students and their drinking behavior. And it was found that there's, you know, basically four categories of the students. There's, at one extreme, those people who don't drink at all. There's those students who drink maybe two or three times a month, but nothing big, you know, just have a beer or something, they're thirsty. Third level are those people who drink excessively every week, maybe two or three times a week. And there's the other extreme, people who are always smashed, always have to have alcohol. And
the standard bell-shaped curve, as they say.
Well, it didn't come out that way. The way it came out was about 60% fall in the lower two category of who don't drink at all and who drink two or three times a month. And those are about 60%, and the other was about 40%. And I think this year, this is what goes back to what I was talking about before, this year a lot more of those people are feeling comfortable in the majority, the 60%, you know, the majority of students on campus are feeling a lot more comfortable with the environment that the residence halls provide for them, and that there's a lot more options for them open. And it's the 40%, the minority, that is choosing to, there's some of them who are choosing to act responsibly. But those are kind of the ones that are taking it more off campus and
Cedar Fest.
Right. But it's kind of like we're kind of trying to remind people or let people know that if you don't drink or you drink very little, you're actually in the majority. And so, you know, you should feel comfortable being proud of that fact, because there is a lot of peer pressure going around campus with alcohol. But I would say that it's not as much anymore on campus at Michigan State, because the new alcohol policy does a good job of of discouraging alcohol use by younger people.
I will give you a completely typed transcript of this interview.
Okay.
And hopefully you will find it interesting. Perhaps not now, because all of this information, you're familiar with it. But 10 years from now, you may have forgotten some of it, and you may want to pick up the transcript and read it with the idea of understanding where your head was in your senior year of college. Considering that, what would you like to say now in terms of a philosophy or a point of view which you might find interesting to read about? I'm really asking you to project yourself in the future in a way.
Ooh, okay.
But what is really important to you? I don't want to fill up this tape with just idle talk of things you're not concerned with. So tell me something you're really concerned with which you might want to reflect on 10 years down the pike.
Okay, actually there's a couple things that'd be kind of interesting. A personal philosophy that I have right now is kind of, it falls back to the notion is life is what you make it. And if there are things in life that don't fit, you alter them so they do fit your needs, your wants, whatever. If they don't have a club on campus that you are interested in, form your own. I did that, and the club is doing quite well.
What club?
The outing club. You know, if there's a certain area of research that isn't well researched, explore it. You know, take the opportunity. If life hasn't presented it there for you, well, you know, change it. Let yourself have these opportunities. It's right now, in order to say it, you know, where my head is, I'm kind of a very optimistic person about the world in general, optimistic about things that can be accomplished, and I live by, you know, pretty optimistic ideas. In terms of where I'd like to be, I think right now my definitions of someone who is successful would be someone who's, first of all, doing a job that makes them feel very comfortable. They're happy. They're not being stressed out excessively. I mean, all jobs have some level of stress, but they're not being stressed out to the point where they hate their job. Who has a comfortable level of income so that it supports their hobbies or activities that they want. I'm not the type of person that wants to be excessively rich, but I would like to be able to do what I want, you know, the kind of that, follow the hobbies that I want. And, you know, if we wanted to travel to visit relatives, I'd like to be able to have the extra money to be able to travel to visit them. And to me, right now, that is kind of someone who would be successful. I don't look at it in terms of a certain level of income. I don't look at it of, like, certain qualifications about material things they have, like so many cars or so many degrees. But I think 10 years from now, I would like to see myself in an occupation that I'm really, really enjoying and in, you know, in a comfortable level of income that would allow me that.
Do you feel that the university for you has been essentially a trade school in the sense that you have taken courses related to your primary field, or has it been, in contrast to that, more of a place where you could explore and, as you said earlier, switch majors if you so chose, or other students have done that, you haven't?
Well, I would say the latter. I think the university is a lot more of, especially in the undergraduate, you know, I don't think they really get specialized at all in any area. I think so much today in our society is becoming so full of technology and so specific that, you know, a graduate degree is almost essential, you know, in most things that people want to go into. And so I think the undergraduate years for people is just a lot more exploring, a lot more projecting. You know, they take a psychology class, they liked it, but could they see themselves doing it? And, you know, people who take a business class, you know, well, am I really going to like this? You know, accounting, it was okay, but, you know. So I think it's a lot more exploring that happens. And for me, it was certainly just, you know, a chance to explore. With a major like animal science, interested in going to veterinary school, I think I'm going to learn all the specifics in veterinary school. And so the undergraduate years are just kind of the classes that are offered are just kind of, you know, get you acquainted with the species that falls under, you know, the animal science, mainly the farm animals, horses, poultry, etc. And there's a lot more chances for people to go back to their farms, I think, with animal science than rather go to vet school. I think if you want to get specifics out of it, you could probably take some back to your farm if you had one and use it. But in terms of going to veterinary school, there's not really much that you learn now that would, you know, help you out. It's mainly just get you acquainted, and then it's a lot easier adjustment in vet school.
Well, you seem to have an essentially positive outlook. Mm-hmm. And you've worked hard, and you've been clear from the start. You seem to have escaped the problems of a certain percentage of freshmen who don't know where they're going for the first mm-hmm. year and a half. And is there a tragic flaw somewhere? What's wrong with Jory Burroughs? Is there a weakness there?
I'm sure there's got to be a weakness. I would say there's not really a tragic flaw because in approaching veterinary medicine, I looked at it from so many perspectives. You know, I talked to large animal practitioners, did some volunteering. I worked for a small animal clinic. I've done things, worked, you know, with a veterinarian with horses, you know, at the racetracks. I've done a lot of exploring on my own about what the field entails, and it's something I would enjoy and feel very, very comfortable with my decision. I'm also the type of person that tends to live by my decisions because I take a long time to make them. And, you know, if I, you know, graduate and maybe didn't find a job right away and what I wanted, you know, I wouldn't be kicking myself saying, you shouldn't have gone into this. I would feel comfortable. I knew the decision I made and I knew the consequences, but I knew what I wanted and I'll live by my decisions. So I guess in that sense, this goes back to one way to describe yourself. I would say that I'm more of an actor. I don't let actions affect me. I'm not a reactor. I don't react to, you know.
Is this part of the dominant side of your father passed on to you? He moves decisively. He dominates.
Yeah, but he's more of a reactor, though. He reacts to situations. He gets easily upset with, you know, his workers who, you know, just don't perform. You know, he reacts to a lot more external things. You know, things bother him. He really lets it get to him. You know, and I think I've kind of maybe taken the best from both my parents. And, you know, if things go wrong, I don't let them bother me. Which being an RA works out real well. You know, a lot of people are really, you know, admirable of my attitudes. You know, especially being an RA with taking this type of approach. But so, you know, things don't really bother me. They don't affect me strongly. I don't react. You know.
What does it take to make you mad?
Something very, very extreme. I don't know. I haven't gotten mad too many times.
In a fight?
You mean like physical or?
Oh, and just to knock him down.
Probably freshman year with my roommate. Probably someone that extreme. Living that close quarters with someone. But I've worked with people similar, and it didn't bother me because, you know, that's something you work with. You know, that's separate. You can blow them off, so to speak, at work and go home, and they're not there. But when you live with someone in a cramped room like a triple, you're always surrounded by that person. And someone being as antagonistic as he was, you know, it brought out some things in me. But that it takes an extreme like that for me to be bothered.
Do you think the most difficult problem for freshmen is the socialization that they go through or attempt to go through in that first year?
I would say that's one part of it. That would probably be a very big part, considering they have to adjust to, you know, now you're living with people, but we're talking about people with different backgrounds, be it ethnic or whatnot. And I would think it's just, it's a socialization, but it's also just looking at life from so many perspectives. You meet so many people with different cultures. I think it's so easy for freshmen to be overwhelmed by everything they see when they come to college, you know? They see the people who have it all from their parents. They see the people who are just, you know, on loans through school. And they either fit in somewhere. A lot of their prejudices come out instantly. That's a big thing I've seen right away with freshmen is, you know, their biases are just blatant, and they...
What are they?
Oh, you know, maybe they think all rich people don't deserve to be rich, or they think, if the other extreme, they think, you know, why are people going to school if they can't afford it? You know, why go through loans or something? All the way to minorities, homophobia. Oh, they, certain professions, they feel, you know, like, well, gee, if you're not in engineering, you know, it's not... not going to get much, you know. Why go into social science, you know? It's kind of a loser profession or something. You know, they might think something like that. It's something that comes out fairly rarely. People, and it's one thing as a resident assistant that, you know, you work hard to quickly deal with because, you know, issues can escalate rather easily.
Were there any other questions on that list which you were interested in? The one that you were interested in had something to do with the increased options of the current crop of collegians.
Well, there's a couple that we've already touched on that I wanted to talk about. There's another one here that I really liked, where you'd mentioned that by some this has been called the me generation. And it seems to be less with causes and ideas in contrast to how much money people will make. And I think, you know, and I've told this to other people, that another reason that people don't want to get married and whatnot is, in some sense, I think people are a lot more independent, and I think people are a lot more selfish in some ways. They want things just for themselves, you know. They want the money they make, well, they want to spend it their own way. You know, they don't want to have to share it with someone else, and they don't want to be tied down. You know, they want to do what they want. They want to make their own money. You know, they don't want to be tied down with, you know, kids going through school or something. I mean, they want to have money. They want to do whatever they want, and they don't want to be stopped. And so everything is kind of, my perception is that people are like, me, you know, I want this for me.
Does this apply to the majority of students?
Oh yeah, I'd say definitely. Especially being an RA, you encounter a lot of that, you know, having to talk to students and they don't want to do things unless it can in some way benefit them. You know, it's hard to convince people that volunteering at a senior citizen's home is, you know, well, they're, you know, I can't exactly point out, you know, monetary benefits maybe they would get. You know, I can't point out, you know, specific things that they'll get out of it. I can, you know, make broad generalizations and but most people are just like, you know, it's got to be monetary. I got to be able to see it.
But don't they want it all? The women want to have families. They want professions. They want to be successful in those professions. And the men want the Porsche, the high-paying job, and the families. Is this an example of the excessive demands of all youth?
Well, you know, a lot of the women, I don't know, I've heard a lot of them want to do good in their profession, and I've heard some of them mention, you know, a family, but I think maybe that would be a lot more with the women than it would be with the men. A lot more of the men, especially that I've talked to, you know, aren't gung-ho about getting a family. They kind of view that as being tied down a little more. The women, I will admit, I've met a lot interested in veterinary medicine or around veterinary medicine that, you know, think they can combine it. You know, they can make the perfect combination of a career and then also I can maybe get a family in there. But I would suspect that was more for the women than for the men. But in terms of people wanting the Porsches and wanting it all, that would be extreme. I don't think their level of success is that you have a Porsche, but I think people just want to be able to do what they want and kind of be free. So
it's in connection with this me generation. So people don't have the idealistic goals. They don't want to go out and save the world. They're focused more on themselves and their own little vocations and how much money they're going to make, et cetera, their standard of living. Do you see that as different with this generation, or do you have any perception of whether earlier generations perhaps would have been more idealistic, the people of the 60s, the kids from the 60s?
I guess I don't understand the question exactly. I would suspect that, you know, the meism attitude is more peculiar to this generation, although I would say there's one reason I suspect that a lot more divorces is some of the other generation is starting to experience a little more. They want a little more of that. But I would say, as a whole, the want-it-all attitude is more characteristic of my generation than of, say, my parents' generation, who I would suspect was a little more idealistic. You know, they kind of wanted to get married out of college, you know, live the happy life, just have a job, you know, and you'd be married, and that would kind of equal your success right there. And I think that's different now, and I think it's a characteristic as a whole of my generation. And then I also suspect that, you know, if you look at figures relating a lot more to divorces and whatnot, I think a lot more people are starting to feel a little more independence, and they want more than what they have. But I wouldn't characterize all my parents' generation as like that, but I would suspect there's a growing number in that area. But I would like to look back 10 years and hope that the society has come to more of a realization about some of the problems that it's facing in regard to wildlife. You know, greenhouse effect, extinction, you know, toxic waste, all these. I would like to hope that people would, quote, come to their senses more and be willing to spend more time dealing with some of those issues that maybe right now they can't see as being pertinent, but why wait until it's so deadly serious before you start to act on it? I would like to hope, be very optimistic that people would be a little more involved and spend a lot more time trying to handle some of the bigger issues than I think a lot of people are doing right now. You know, I don't jump off smokestacks, but I try and support, you know, do what I can to help those who are dedicated to doing those. And I'd like to see a little more push, and I hope that looking back 10 years that I have seen a bigger push in our society towards stopping some of the national problems that we have, ones that can seriously affect, you know, the human race and what we leave behind for our children. So I would like to see society do a lot for those. And I'd like to see myself as an equine surgeon in Minnesota, but that's just something that I'd like, because to me Minnesota would be a nice place to live. Has a lot of the outdoors that I like. People in Minnesota that I've met, they're really nice.
Happily married with a family?
Yes. I would like to have a family. I guess I'm different than some college students in that case. I would like to have some kids, and I'd like to spend a lot of time with my kids. It's something that I feel is very important.